Hey, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark. Oh, these things these eyes have seen. Frank, I almost called myself Finkston. And that is Chris.
You wish.
Oh, if God only knew what I had gone through Finkston over there.
Right, exactly. If God only knew what I've caused, right. I think is a little more accurate. Slightly scarier. Is that it? Are we done?
So how was your Thanksgiving, Chris?
My Thanksgiving was good. It was a lot of fun. My brother came down, which is good. Don't get to see him very often. And the wife absolutely nailed the turkey. And I have a Thanksgiving confession.
To the wall?
To the window! Anyway, completely different take on Thanksgiving there. I have a Thanksgiving confession, though, and that is that I actually don't like turkey. Here's the thing, though. I don't like turkey because most people don't do it right.
Yeah.
You get either pink, which you shouldn't eat, or dry, which you don't want to eat.
Right.
And I don't like it. And so this year, I just got to say the last couple Thanksgivings, my wife's been doing the turkey and it's been amazing.
Really?
To the point where now I look forward to turkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and even at our place of work, mm-hmm. we had a Thanksgiving.
It was amazing.
It was awesome.
It was, yeah.
One of our employees
and his wife, they catered it.
Yeah.
The company employed them to cater it. They, you know, but he told me he cooked for 19 hours straight to make enough food.
Oh, God. And it all tasted great.
Turkey. We had ham. We had mashed potatoes. We had green bean casserole. We had two different types of stuffing. We had veggies. We had gravy. We had, they had these little sausages wrapped in bacon.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, it is a nice touch because I guess one of the things that, it's nice because it does get remembered around the holidays, but, you know, always remember that your paramedics, your firefighters, your police, mm-hmm. based people in public safety, there are no holidays.
No.
It's because we have to nurses, work them. Yeah, nurses especially doctors, nurses. Because we have to work them. And it is a nice touch to be able to come into work and just see a beautiful spread there.
And they did. They not only made great food, it looked – I mean, the spread was really good looking.
It was awesome. It was really good.
Today we're going to be talking about post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, but we have a brief correction to make on one of our previous episodes.
Oh, that's right. Chris screwed up.
Yeah. So, I try to keep Chris under control. You can only do so much, though. I know. You know, you can only work with the tools you're given.
Right. So, we actually had a listener contact us.
Yeah.
With a correction from a previous show.
Right. And so we might have actually done this in two shows. But
if we're going to do it, you might as well be consistent with being wrong.
Right,
you
know? Exactly. But it was in reference to HIV. And we had talked about how a lot of treatments with HIV can make the virus undetectable, which is true. And then after that, we said that even if it's undetectable, you can still transmit the disease. What it boils down to is we were wrong. And what it is recently the CDC has taken the position due to very good evidence that undetectable is now considered untransmittable.
The thing was, is at the time, the research I found.
Right.
Sorry. The research Chris found.
To be honest, I found old research and I didn't look at new stuff if I'm going to be completely.
The thing is, we always endeavored to be correct.
Right.
And there's a lot of information. I mean, sometimes El Goog overwhelms you.
Yeah.
You know, the Goog can really give you a lot of information.
Right.
So if you do find a mistake, blame Chris, first of all. Go straight to the my go-to position, which is blame Chris.
Absolutely. He stubs his toe in the morning. I'm not even there. I got a phone call. God
damn it, Chris.
But
all the studies they looked at, they haven't found one case of an HIV-positive partner having unprotected sex with their non-positive partner and it transmitting.
Right, in an undetectable viral load.
Right.
That's true. And there's a lot of reasons where it's important that we get this right. And our listener made a really good point in their messages is that what it can do is it reduces hope and it may drive people away from treatment.
Right.
That otherwise...
Or having a healthy relationship, an otherwise healthy relationship with somebody.
Absolutely.
Because they're concerned about that.
And so anyway, we didn't want to create any stigma around it. We tried our best, but we didn't do our best that time. And someone pointed out, and you know what? We're glad they did.
Thank you, Nikolai.
So now you have the right information out there for those of you that listen to us, and there you go.
Right.
All righty.
So let's see what we can mess up on PTSD.
Absolutely. Let's get started.
Let's forge into a new subject we can screw up on. So post-traumatic stress disorder is a psychiatric disorder that occurs in people who have experienced or witnessed a traumatic event, such as a natural disaster, a serious accident, a terrorist act, war, combat, if they've been a victim of sexual assault or other personal assaults.
Like talking to Mark.
Right.
It's PTSD in and of itself.
It is. I've told people many times that Chris and my daughter have a group for people, a support group for people who know me.
The best thing I've heard recently, and I'm sorry to digress, but...
Is this about me?
Is it? Oh, it is. is that... So, Mark... Mark always wears shorts, unless he is required by his job to wear uniform pants. He always wears shorts. He's just a shorts guy. I've known few of these people in my life. Mm-hmm. Even if it could be snowing outside, and Mark is in shorts. It's just the way he is. And if you ask him why he's not cold, his answer is simply...
I don't believe I'm not cold.
Yeah.
Or you don't believe I'm cold.
Yeah. He doesn't just doesn't believe he's cold.
I just don't believe I'm cold.
Yeah. I mean, physiological signs be damned. He just doesn't believe he's cold.
Do you want to know where I got that from?
I don't know if it's going to make it better, but I am curious.
Buddhist monks.
Who?
Buddhist monks.
Buddhist monks. Okay.
So I was watching a documentary a long time ago, and they were talking about these Buddhist monks that would go out in the middle of winter into the mountains and sleep overnight without anything other than their regular clothes that they wear.
Yeah.
And not suffer effects from it. And basically, when they talk to them and ask them why, they said, because we just don't let it bother us.
Yeah.
So when you get cold, you walk outside and the cold hits you, you tense up, you get all, you know, it's a psychological thing.
Right.
When I go outside and it's cold, I don't let that stuff bother me. I just don't believe I'm cold.
Right.
Now there is a temperature at which point my body goes, yeah, motherfucker, you're cold. I mean, that only gets me down to about, these days, probably the high 20s.
To be clear... There is a physiological need to live in the right temperature. You can't just suddenly survive in the Antarctic, to be clear.
No. Like I said, but
you can certainly be more comfortable.
In most circumstances, yeah, I just don't believe I'm cold. I don't get all tense. I don't tighten up my back muscles. I don't.
I wonder if there's something to do with maybe like the relaxation that you go through kind of causes like vasodilation, which allows heat to rise to the surface. Kind of anyway.
PTSD. So people who I tell that to, my daughter probably has a little bit of PTSD from that because every time I say it to her, it drives her up a wall. But I also tell her the reason she's not warm is because she doesn't have a soul to keep her warm. So PTSD has been known by many names over the years. Inertially, it was called shell shock during the years of World War I.
Did you say inertially?
Inertially, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Inertially.
Physics stuff is our...
Right. No, initially it was called shell shock. And, you know, that was during World War I, which was a horrific war. Have you ever had any information on World War I and how bad it was?
No, I mean, I've read about, like, trench warfare and those kind of things.
If you like history stuff, Chris, go listen to Hardcore History at Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. And then he does, like, a 22-hour thing. On World War One.
Oh, nice.
Fascinating.
Dan Carlin didn't hit us back on the reference? Or joking? Nothing.
No, I wish. Basically, the problem with World War One was you had pre-industrial age mentality to war mixing with industrial age weapons.
Yeah.
So, you know, before where, you know, yeah, you had guns before that, but they weren't real hardcore machine guns and, you know, stuff like that. So... Anyway, PTSD. Right. World War II is called combat fatigue, you know, but it doesn't just occur in combat veterans. There is a significant amount of combat veterans that do suffer from PTSD, and it's a horrible thing. But PTSD can occur in all people, in any ethnicity, nationality, culture, or any age. Basically, this is, you know, affects about 3.5% of the U.S. adults. And an estimated 1 in 11 people diagnosed with PTSD in their life or will be diagnosed at some point in their life. Women are twice as likely as men to have PTSD.
Hmm.
So have you seen the latest controversy about the Christmas Carol?
No.
Baby, It's Cold Outside?
Yes.
There's a lot of people that... Have you ever read the lyrics?
I've heard the lyrics, and I've always thought, I'm like... This sounds...
Kind of rapey.
Yeah, sure does.
Kind of rapey. Yeah, I understand it was a different time, and I know that the intent was not that way, but I think it shows definitely a male-dominated culture. The reason I bring this up is not just because it's in the news right now.
Right.
But that statistic that women are twice as likely as men to have PTSD.
Okay.
And I think it's part of that culture where you know, being a male-dominated society, and males for many years and still to this day not understanding the consequence of their actions.
Right.
When they are doing something they feel is not wrong.
But just trying to keep her warm.
Exactly. you know, well, they're saying things or doing things that they aren't necessarily, you know, it's a tough, I really got myself into a sentence here. I don't know if I can get myself out of.
Right. I'm going to watch you try.
you're going to sit right there and watch me, aren't you? Yes, there are plenty of men out there who know exactly what the fuck they're doing.
Oh, definitely.
But I also think that there are, due to the culture, there are a number of men who don't take the time to consider the consequence of their actions.
Oh, of course. Of course they don't.
And so
I think if everyone took the time to consider the consequence of their actions, what a world this would be.
Right.
And yeah, and I think there are caveats in society that allow men to get away with that more often than women. Far more often than
especially women. The lighter shaded men, white men.
Yeah.
You know, you see things in the news where, you know, two people who are of different ethnicities receiving different severity of punishments.
Yeah.
For similar crimes.
Right.
So people with PTSD have intense, disturbing thoughts. and feelings related to their experience. Oh, okay. Thoughts and related to their experience that last long after the traumatic event. These are the, you know, the big kind of demographic that's pushing research would be your combat vets. The
right.
horrific things that you see in war are going to stick with these people for many years afterwards. And they're finding the same thing with patients who have never been in the military, but have still experienced horrific events in their life.
Absolutely. I mean, post-traumatic stress disorder can happen to, I mean, Mark and I work in EMS. There's plenty of stuff that we get to see that is perfectly capable of leaving a lasting impression and resulting in PTSD. And PTSD is on the rise amongst emergency workers.
I don't think that it's on the rise. I think it's always been there. It's just that we're now willing to talk about it.
That's a good point.
Or we're more willing to talk about it. I mean, there was a... When I started, it's part of the job.
Oh, yeah.
Suck it up, buttercup.
Right, exactly.
You know, and...
Either you can take it or you can't.
Right, you know, and so, in fact, there was a medic I knew that had some horrific calls, and it kind of broke this person.
Yeah.
They walked away from EMS.
Which is probably a good decision on their behalf.
Which is probably a good decision, you know... But I was talking to a second pair. Well, I was talking to Spence.
All right.
And we were discussing this person, not in a bad manner. Just, you know, this went down very matter-of-factly. And I thought, and I said to Spencer, I'm like, why do we consider him the broken one?
Like, why aren't we
broken?
Why
are we not the broken ones that we can do this for 20 years, 15 years, you know, and not have that reaction to it? Maybe he's the normal one. Well, in the intro, most people would run away screaming.
Oh, yeah.
At the sight of a dismembered body part.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Most people would. But for whatever reason, most of us don't. I was just going to bring up, sorry to divulge in EMS here a little bit, is I think because PTSD, now it has gotten better. Like our agency, for example, is very aggressive about the employee assistance programs that we have.
Right.
And we have a policy where you can, if you have a rough call, you can go home. You don't lose a dime.
And it's subjective to what the call was.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be
as a supervisor, a
pediatric code. It doesn't have to be a horrific trauma.
Yeah.
It's something triggered something in you on this call.
Well, and as a supervisor, this is how it's activated. Someone calls me and says, hey, I'm being affected by a rough call. I need to go home. Cool. Go home. I don't even ask you what it is.
You do make sure they get back to their car, though, with the corporate.
No. They gotta hop out of the ambulance at that point. Right. Walk their own ass home. Hey, exercise is treatment for depression.
And critical incident stress. So.
Yeah, so there you go.
Hoof it home, bucko.
No. But I think one of the biggest things is a lot of times I would be willing to bet, I would put money on it, that a lot of paramedics who had experienced symptoms of PTSD, because we're taught to repress those feelings, really don't know what's happening to them.
Right. Well,
they're not identifying this as PTSD because they've been taught and kind of hardened to bury the feelings down to the point that you, and air quotes, what's the air quote sound? Yeah. To air quote.
I really hope that's not patented.
Right. Otherwise, we're screwed.
We're not making any money on this. We can't afford to pay for a patent.
But yeah, air quotes, forget about it. But they don't really forget about it. It's in there. And the lasting effects will be
there. Well, it doesn't. Well, I mean, and you could, I'm sure there's probably statistics out there correlating like high incidences of
Incites, yes.
Incites, okay. Mm-hmm. Or the high percentage.
Disclaimer, that may be a made up word.
Maybe. I think the fact you put maybe in that sentence is the most disturbing part of it. The high percentage of divorces in emergency service.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Because it affects you.
Absolutely.
It absolutely affects you, even if you're not showing it externally. And with it, I mean, when it affects you like that and you're trying not to show it externally, it still comes out. You're angrier. Your body will try and find a balance somehow. And unfortunately, when you are not willing to address the problem, it then exhibits itself in destructive behavior. You start doing things like
drugs,
drinking, extramarital affairs, you know, just general overall pissiness.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know that one of our local fire agencies, at least one of our local fire agencies, actually has a mental health professional on staff.
You know, smart.
Because, we see. And we'll get into some of the statistics a little bit later, but, you know, we do see some horrible things. But as we were saying, people who are not in emergency services can also get the PTSD because they experience traumatic and horrific things, such as natural disasters.
Well, and one of the things you got to understand is that EMS exists because horrible things happen to people.
Right.
And death of a loved one, assault, sexual assault, and, of course, different things at different ages.
Right. Oh, yeah. It can. I mean, if it happens to you at the right age, it can absolutely affect your development. There's new and increasing evidence of serial killers having traumatic events at a young age.
Oh, yeah. I would doubt that one bit.
So they may relive the event through flashbacks or nightmares. They may feel sadness, fear, or anger. They feel detached and estranged from other people. You know, people with PTSD may avoid situations or people that remind them of the traumatic events. They may have strong or negative reactions to something as ordinary as a loud noise or an accidental touch.
So, diagnosis. So, how is this diagnosed?
By a doctor.
But nailed it. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for listening to Medical Stuff. Moving on. So, intrusive thoughts such as repeated involuntary memories. So, the behaviors are looked for or patterns are looked for. Mm-hmm. One of those patterns would be intrusive thoughts such as repeated involuntary memories. This is waking up in the middle of the night, cold sweats, remembering a horrific memory when you were from a wartime memory. This could be driving your car and mm-hmm. suddenly having flashbacks to an accident you were involved in. Mm-hmm. That was actually a big thing for a family member of mine. They were in a really bad accident. They were rear-ended, and all they were doing was just sitting in traffic. Sitting in traffic, person behind them was an older person and mm-hmm. did not perceive traffic had stopped and nailed them. They were fine, but for the longest time, going and sitting in traffic, start mm-hmm. getting anxious, start watching their mirror. Mm-hmm. Now, this person was not diagnosed with PTSD, and ultimately this passed, that is kind of
we're going to talk about a separate but very similar order.
Right.
You know, so.
So some of the flashbacks may be so vivid that people feel they're reliving the traumatic experience or seeing it right before their eyes. So
and this could be the person having the nightmare.
Yes. And that another thing that will be looked for in diagnosis is avoiding reminders of the traumatic event, which, like Mark said, that could be people, places, activities, objects, situations, anything that could bring about that distressing memory or cause a flashback. Mm-hmm. People may try to avoid remembering or thinking about the traumatic event. They may resist talking about what happened or how they feel about it, which is also very common in EMS, like Mark and I were mentioning. Mm-hmm. And that's just kind of one of the ways that right there kind of goes to show how PTSD really impacts your life. You start avoiding whole sections of what could otherwise be a normal or even fun activity. Mm-hmm. But because it reminds you of what happened,
right,
you have to cut it out of your life. That could have its own implications later on. So negative thoughts and feelings may include ongoing and distorted beliefs about oneself or others, like I am bad or they can't trust anybody. Mm-hmm. Ongoing fear, horror, anger, guilt, or even shame. Much less interest in activities previously enjoyed or feeling detached or strained from others.
You know, and the guilt or shame is, I mean, especially bad. I mean, this happens a lot of times, unfortunately, in rape victims. Mm-hmm. where they feel guilt or shame at having been raped.
Right.
Which, I mean, on top of the fact that you've experienced this horrific event, now why would you be put in a position where you need to feel guilt or shame? Because, unfortunately, there's societal inputs to that reinforce that concept.
Well, also think about when it happens within a family, mm-hmm. when it's family members doing it. Are you going to break up the family for this? And then when you do come out about it, did it break up the family?
Right.
You know, and people, unfortunately, again, like you said, societal pressures, for some odd reason, you know, people in society somehow give people caveats, or they'll take the side of someone who's committing the assault. Oh, it wasn't that bad, or oh, that's not really sexual assault, or those kind of things. And what that ends up with is you end up with victims feeling guilty for creating a ruckus or creating a problem.
Right.
Yeah, which,
I don't know what the thought process is, you know, but they want to protect they end up protecting the person who committed the act.
Right.
And because they feel that that's the better way to go. You may also have reactive symptoms, reactive symptoms may include being irritable, having angry outbursts, behaving recklessly or in a self-destructive way. So, do you remember a show called Trauma?
Yes, I do.
Did you like a show called Trauma?
I did not care for it.
Did Jesse at the time like a show called Trauma?
Did she?
Yes. You used to be coming like, she watched the show again. But this was before she was a medic.
Yes.
And then she became a medic and she's like, yeah, I see why you didn't like that show.
Yeah. Well, I think if I remember correctly, the other thing too was the show actually legitimately, aside from its medical or its inaccurate portrayal of the job, it did have some legitimately intriguing drama and some legitimately intriguing kind of side stories. Mm. You know, but
agree to disagree.
Yeah, well, okay. Fair enough. I mean, that's what she found intriguing anyway.
Right. I could see, if you don't know the reality, I could see how it'd be. I mean, they're still doing it I talk about like ER. Mm-hmm. I have never run into a hospital with a patient on a gurney yelling what was going on with him at the top of my lungs.
It's never happened.
No, never. In fact, if you do that, they're going to tell you, shut up.
Yeah. Hey, like the doctors going to be looking at each other. Because here's the thing you got to understand. When you walk in with your emergency, you might be the third or fourth critical emergency in that hour.
Right.
And so, and the other doctor's going to be like, yeah, you know, I mean, not get in line, but hey, there's a process.
Right.
You're going to go into this room.
How many times I've been giving report, mm-hmm. and right in the middle of my report, I'm like, okay, so this patient is a 34-year-old male whose name is, and date of birth is, and last four of the social security number are, not for any medical reason, but because admitting standing at the back of the room.
Yeah.
And they're, because they, until they get them admitted in the computer, they can't do anything for them.
Yeah. And there's a reason for that. It's not just financial before you spin off there. We have a system in place because we need to check for allergies. Because right. If you don't know who someone is, you could potentially kill them.
Right.
And so it is clinically pertinent that these people get admitted.
Med list. You may want to give a medication to a person that interacts negatively with the medication they're on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Viagra being an example of that.
Yeah. And so when we walk into an ER, the only thing to realize is, hey guys, what room do you want us in? That's what I shout.
Right.
That's not even really a shout.
Yeah, where are we going? And usually it's towards the group with a large group of people hanging out outside the room.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so anyway, the reason I bring up trauma, we went on that whole digression, was I remember you and I joking about, apparently as paramedics, we are all one bad call away from becoming raging alcoholics.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, there were so many things that irritated me about that show.
And I was a raging alcoholic before I became a paramedic. Right. So there.
Don't limit me on my alcoholism.
Don't take credit.
Exactly. You know, but there's your reckless behavior. It's going out and getting drunk. It's, you know, gambling to the point of losing everything.
Yeah.
It's engaging in extra relationship affairs or activities that put that in danger.
Yeah.
You know, so you're talking about a family member who had been in a car accident. So we have a related condition called acute stress disorder.
Hmm.
So acute stress disorder occurs in a reaction to a traumatic event, similarly to PTSD, And the symptoms are similar. However, the symptoms occur between 3 days and 1 month after the event. People with acute stress disorder may relive the trauma, have flashbacks or nightmares, or detach themselves. But these symptoms are caused to major stress and cause a problem in their daily lives. About half the people with acute stress disorder go on to have PTSD. And an estimated 13 to 20% of survivors of car accidents develop acute stress disorder, and between 20 and 50% of the survivors of assault, rape, or mass shootings develop it also.
Now that makes sense.
So this is kind of it would be the TIA to the stroke.
Okay. Makes sense.
You know, if you have a TIA, which is a transient ischemic attack, go back and listen to our stroke episode if you want more information on that.
Yeah. It's basically a stroke that comes and then goes away.
Right. You may want to have a stroke or you may not.
Right.
Same thing with acute stress disorder. You can develop it, but it should resolve.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, then you need to roll into PTSD. But you also, a lot of your treatments are going to be fairly similar.
Speaking of treatments.
Are we?
Sure,
why not?
Sort of. I mean, we're kind of at the tail end of
We are. Yeah, we are. All right. I was just actually trying to throw you off.
Nailed it. Anyway, so speaking of treatments, one treatment for this is going to be psychotherapy. And this is still on the acute stress disorder. But psychotherapy, including cognitive behavior therapy, can help control symptoms and help prevent it from getting worse, developing into PTSD. Medications such as SSRI antidepressants. Which are what? Is that serotonin reuptake inhibitors? I don't know what the
selective serotonin.
Yeah. What's the other S for?
Selective.
Okay, perfect. Can help ease the symptoms. So this is why it's important to recognize, this is why our company does this. This is why it's important to recognize these traumatic events and acute stress disorder early on. So you can go ahead and address that problem now.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of letting it develop.
Well, you were talking about our company's stressful call protocol.
Absolutely.
You said, yes, go home, but that's not all you do.
Right. You drink.
You as a supervisor, jackass. I'm joking. No, every person that's going to be going home on this is going to be getting access to our employee assistance program.
Yeah.
And they can call them up and they can be connected with a counselor.
Yeah. And actually at our company, we also have something called the Operations Advisory Committee. And one of the things I was recently happy to see is one of the OAC members actually put out there is general information to the employees, just as a reminder, this is the phone number for EAP.
Right.
If you need it, give it a call. And it was good. It was one of those things that's a good reminder to have out there. Personally, and this is something that I think that, if you're in a position of leadership at your agency or you have access to someone that is, one of the practices that we try and employ is that anytime a traumatic event happens that we're aware of, and you're not going to be aware of all these calls, but if you see something like a pediatric code go out, or you come and you know there's a mass casualty incident occurring, go approach those employees and just give them the information whether they ask for it or not. Because a lot of times the biggest barrier to information is people feeling they have to go ask for it. Because if you ask for it, you admit it. If the supervisor just comes out and gives it to you.
With no questions.
Yeah.
No judgment.
Yeah, exactly. And if you don't need it, you don't need it. It's fine. But I go out there and give it to you. And I gave it to everyone that's on scene. And that you don't have to tell anybody that you're using it at all. If that's a barrier for you, then you don't have to. But it's there to use.
The thing is with the AP is that all employees should have access to it. The company never finds out who uses it or why.
No, we don't.
They will know it has been used, but they don't know why.
The only time that we would find out is just much like – so the only time that an employer who utilizes EAP – I'm not talking about specifically ours. I'm talking about employers in general – utilizes EAP – may know about it is if it is part of your condition to return to work.
Right.
Because it may be that you're not able to come back to work. And so therefore it gets mandated and then they may know about it.
Right. Then they would need to know the reasoning behind it.
But the only thing they'll know is that a psychiatrist says you have successfully completed.
Right.
That's what they'll know.
Yeah. So treatments for PTSD. Psychiatrists and other mental health professionals use various effective research-proven methods to help people recover from PTSD. Talk therapy and medications provide effective evidence-based treatments for PTSD. One category of psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapies, is very effective. Cognitive processing therapy, prolonged exposure therapy, and stress inoculation are among the types of cognitive behavior therapies that are used to treat PTSD. Cognitive processing therapy focuses on modifying painful negative emotions such as shame or guilt, and beliefs such as I have failed or the world is dangerous due to the trauma. So on prolonged therapy, or prolonged exposure, therapy uses repeated and detailed imaging of the trauma or progressive exposures to the symptoms triggers in a safe way, controlled to help the person face and gain control of the fear and distress and learn to cope. For example, virtual reality programs have been used to help war veterans with PTSD re-experience the battlefield in a controlled therapeutic way. What's up next, Chris? Stop playing with your knobs and get to work.
So let's talk about group therapy. Group therapy encourages survivors of similar traumatic events to share their experiences and reactions in a comfortable and non-judgmental setting. Group members help one another realize that many people would have responded the same way and felt the same emotions. Family therapy may also help because the behavior and distress of the person with PTSD can affect the entire family. Other psychotherapies, such as interpersonal, supportive, and psychodynamic therapies, focus on the emotional and interpersonal aspects of PTSD. These may be helpful for people who don't want to expose themselves to reminders of their trauma. Now, when we're talking about group therapy, I can tell you personally, I kind of luck out here in the sense that not only do I have the group therapy in the sense that I can talk to my family is also in EMS.
Right.
And there is a lot to be said when you can talk to someone that...
Let's just say it. And you could swing a dead cat at your family reunion and be able to hit a paramedic.
Yeah, probably.
You know.
Probably. We have lots of dead cats to swing around. Right. So, Jesse has an allergy, so...
Right.
They get near.
No, I mean, yeah, you're very fortunate for that, in that your wife, your mother-in-law, your father, mm-hmm. all... paramedics, firefighters.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that we had talked about earlier was there's a feeling of guilt sometimes. Mm-hmm. And in EMS, it's very common to run a perfect call and the person still dies.
Oh, I thought you were being facetious there. Okay, go
ahead. Oh, no. I was
it's very common for us to nail it all the time.
Yeah, but...
no, you can do everything. Well, there was a medic, they had truly horrific call. It was a child who got hit by a car.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to them, and they're like, explain the rules to me. I don't understand the rules of the life, apparently. And I said, well, that's kind of the big joke in the fact there are no rules.
Yeah.
And bad things happen to good people. And, you know, unfortunately, especially in this event, we never got a vote. Unfortunately, the child had passed before we got there.
Yeah.
And, you know, so at least in the so regardless of what we could have done for this child, we aren't going to make it.
Yeah.
Cardiac arrests. You know, I mean, I've been a medic for 25 years. I've run a sizable number of cardiac arrests.
And for a few of those, you were a good medic.
Right. First couple.
Yeah.
Back when I still cared. We've essentially been running codes the same way for the last 25 years.
Yeah, every now and then
they tweak some stuff around. They move some drugs around. They add a drug. They take away a drug. They change a drug. You know, I mean, but essentially you get there, you start CPR, you give medications, you control the airway, you shock them if they need to be done.
That's about it.
Yeah. Various, you know, priorities have changed. You know, methods have improved.
They've changed like the rhythm we do it.
Right.
You know.
Some people survived. A lot of them didn't.
Right. A lot of them still don't. More survive now.
More survive, but still they're the minority.
And it's one of those things that sometimes you walk away. Oftentimes, I would say oftentimes you walk away. Even I would say on calls that ultimately I don't feel affect me. I don't feel too traumatized by. I always walk away thinking, did we do that correctly? Did we do that 100% right? And I'm at a point now where I feel I've matured quite a bit as an EMS professional over the years. Mm-hmm. And to most calls, even if they go south, we run a great code and the person still dies, it doesn't bother me as much. But I always leave it thinking, could I have done something better?
Absolutely.
But I will ultimately say that I have had calls where things did go okay and I was still left with guilt. Because it's one of those things like where, you know, the one I'm thinking about is I felt like due to the patient's age, it should have been a better chance of them surviving.
Mm-hmm.
So why didn't they? I mean, it's not like I went on like, oh, you're the 87-year-old who finally had a heart attack. I'm going to get over that one okay. Not that I don't value the 87-year-old, but
they've led a good life.
Yeah, they've had a life. Well, I don't know if it was good or not, but they had one.
Well, 87 years good.
Yeah.
You know.
They had the opportunities.
As opposed to a 35-year-old.
Right, exactly. And it's harder to let go, and it's nice for me to be able to come home and talk to another paramedic who's also in my family, and sometimes like, well, how'd the call go? And I can sit there and I can talk about everything I did and why we did it and all that stuff, and they can say, yeah, that's what you should do,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Well, I mean, I remember when I started in EMS, I had a FTO. I won't say his name here because I don't think he really likes me. But anyway.
Yeah, well, who can blame him?
Nobody really does.
Say, you should probably stop saying my name too.
Only joke. It only hurts when my daughter says it. but he told me, he goes, you know, you'll walk off some calls and you'll be like, I am an EMS god. You may worship me if you like. You know, just you stumble and you start the IV.
I wouldn't use the term hero, but I understand if you would.
Right.
So,
you know,
go ahead and say it.
You have those calls where just everything goes right.
Yeah.
You know, except for the fact that the patient passed.
Whoops.
But like I said, you grab an IV, you turn around, you stumble and you start the IV.
Well, that has literally happened with you and me.
Yeah.
There was a... So to digress off this digression, we were driving and I was a newer paramedic at the time. And I will admit, IV skills is something that I'm either on fire with or I can't. I just suck. Mm-hmm. And I was having one of those moments where I'm not hitting it, not doing it. And Mark gives me fair warning, but I was focused on what I was doing. And Mark says, Drax, we hit some railroad tracks. Pretty good. I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't braced. I went forward. Mm-hmm. I looked down. The IV has started. I just went ahead and just pushed it, and I went ahead and just went ahead and secured that. And as I'm documenting, I'm like, so who gets the credit for this one's success?
Do I document this? Oh, you took it. We all know you took credit.
Oh, of course I did. Because how else would you explain it? Hey, Mark was in the back of the ambulance, Mark was driving the ambulance, right. But he got the IV?
Yeah.
Well,
let me tell you a story. But, you know, and then conversely to this, you'll come across calls that just nothing goes right. If you pick it up, you drop it. You know, you get a line, somebody pulls it out. You move the monitor somewhere, it falls off whatever you put it on.
Yeah.
You know, and you can get a lot of guilt from that because you may come off the call feeling that you didn't do everything or, you know, not everything that could have been done was done.
Yeah.
Because you were spending so much time trying to make up for the, you know, for everything. And it's not anything that you're doing or necessarily anybody is doing incorrectly. So, you know, I mean, you can come off with a lot of guilt from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you make a wrong turn and it took you a little bit longer to get to the call. I hate having to go back through an intersection immediately after I've just gone through because I went the wrong direction.
Oh, and you're like lights and siren.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And, sorry. Pardon me.
And all the same people that saw you go through the first time saw you go through the second time.
You almost want a wave.
Yeah.
You know? Well, and it's also – and here's the other thing. We're also humans and sometimes we do the wrong thing. Sometimes we...
You're wandering into an area where we can get sued or cross.
Sometimes other paramedics.
Right, in other companies.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, we are human. And it's, I mean, it's all... Nobody wants to discuss it, but at all levels of medicine, mistakes are made sometimes.
Absolutely.
Not due to maliciousness or incompetence, due to human nature factor.
It's just, well, like Mark said, sometimes you take the wrong turn.
Mm-hmm.
And that can end... It is absolutely inconceivable and impossible for anyone to have a reasonable expectation of 100% perfection.
But it's the only acceptable standard in our job.
Exactly. And that is a ton of pressure. And right. So when you let that standard down, and if you're a new paramedic, someday you might.
Oh, you will.
Yeah, you will let that standard down.
You want to hear a morbid thing?
Sure.
Where I worked in Oklahoma, you weren't a real paramedic till you killed somebody.
Oh, jeez. Oklahoma.
You know, well, I mean, the thing was is that was, I mean, that, I mean, not seriously. That wasn't like, you know, what got you your certification. But, you know, congratulations, welcome to the crowd, you know. But
why aren't you a paramedic yet? I have just run too many successful Code 99s.
Exactly. No, but the theory was, I mean, the statement was, is that it's going to happen.
Right.
That same first FTO, we carried a particular kit. It was a backpack style kit. And I've seen later versions of it. They don't have this anymore. But on this particular style and model, you open up the backpack and the lid flops all the way out, and you have all sorts of stuff in the flap.
Mm-hmm.
At the very top of the flap were two compartments, zippered compartments that had like a plastic covering so you could see what was inside them.
Yeah.
Behind that was a Velcroed hidden compartment, right? And I was like, so what? He goes, and then we got this right here. And opens up this compartment. He goes, this is where you put your inflatable dog. So that no matter where you are or what you're doing, you can pull the pooch out and screw it. I was like, huh. He's like, you always have the capability of screwing the pooch.
There you go.
And no matter what's going on, there's no perfect situation where it can't happen.
Yeah.
So keep that in the back of your head. So medications, they can control the symptoms of the PTSD. So again, the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, as far as I know, they really don't use any sort of psychotropic type drugs, your Haldols or anything like that, unless there's an underlying condition there.
I think Haldol, I believe, and I could be way incorrect on this, but my understanding of Haldol is that that's more of a, there's an acute flashback there. There's more of an acute situation or acute, gosh, why can't I think of the term? I want to say like a spike in activity, but I can't think of the term. Dear Lord. Help us out.
I don't know what you're trying to say, but I'm absolutely not trying to think of the word because it's having fun watching you stumble around.
But yeah, it's basically like if there's an acute increase in symptoms, that Haldol is more effective for those outbreaks, I guess you could say.
Okay.
Of PTSD type symptoms as opposed to being prescribed.
More
as,
of a short term.
Yeah.
Get you through the rough patch.
Yeah.
So
something.
But anyway, yeah, there are medications that they use to treat the symptoms so that the psychotherapies and the cognitive therapies and the group therapies will become more effective and have a better chance of success. Now, I put pet therapy in here, Chris.
Because you like dogs.
I do love dogs. My dog's awesome.
Yeah.
He's so funny. We had an argument the other day in my car.
Right.
In his language. That's funny. So,
just imagine you'd be like, rawr, rawr,
rawr, rawr, rawr. No, I was. Rawr, rawr, rawr. And then he would talk back to me, and then I would talk to him. And basically, he was upset, I believe, because I was not, because we were close to my parents' house, and he loves my parents' house because he gets lots of treats there. Yeah. And I was not moving fast enough for him, but I was stuck in traffic. And so I was trying
to go.
He was getting all amped up because we're almost at Nana and Granddad's house. And I was stuck at a red light, and that was unacceptable. So I was trying to tell him that we could not go until the light turned green, which didn't help considering dogs are colorblind.
There's a me.
I have explained to my dog that the top one means I have to stop and the bottom one means I can go because he's colorblind and I understand. I don't want to limit his ability to understand what's going on.
There is a meme out there that says, I heard the other day that some cat owners actually talk to their cats and think they can understand them. I told my dog about this. It cracked him up.
I saw a joke. It was two dogs and a cat go to heaven, right?
Okay.
And
seems unlikely, but okay.
Sorry. So
not a cat.
One of the dogs is a boxer. The other dog was a German shepherd. God looks at the German shepherd and says, what's your belief? He goes, I believe in my master and I believe in protecting and serving and taking care of the one I love. He goes, okay, you may sit at my right. He looks at the boxer and he goes, what's your belief? The boxer says, I believe in protecting my property and my owners and making sure the area is secure and safe for them so they can be safe. Okay, you may sit at my left. He looks at the cat and goes, what's your belief? The cat goes, I believe you're sitting in my seat.
That sounds about right.
Anywho's there. Pet therapy. Why are we like talking about pet therapy? Pet therapy has been used quite a bit with PTSD patients.
That's PTSD.
The reason it's in here is because I may have clicked on the wrong page. started reading about pet therapy, thinking it was part of the PTSD page, and it wasn't. But as I did more research, yes. Especially dogs are very good when they've been trained properly to help with anxiety attacks and help keep people calm when they start feeling the symptoms coming on so they can better navigate the incident. Yeah, I know. I was doing it
earlier. Yeah, it's hard.
If you keep hearing bumps, it's because Chris and I keep bumping the microphone stands with our phones as we're trying to look at the research we put down.
Yeah.
So
let's talk stats.
Some statistical type stuff.
So the lifetime risk of for developing PTSD in the U.S., I believe, as Mark mentioned earlier, is about 3.5% in adults. Increased rates of PTSD are notable in those who have jobs that place them at risk for being part of a traumatic event.
Real quick, I want to talk about something here that I did not put in here because I could not find any reasoning for it.
Probably means it's false. I'm just joking.
Probably. So this one of the sites I researched on, they mentioned how Latino, Asian, and non-European descent cultures have a lower incidence of PTSD.
Huh. It's weird.
But I could not find any sort of corroborating.
Like why?
Why it was. Because it doesn't seem like there should be a reason for that. I mean, it seems to me like traumatic events happen all over the world.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there was a cultural correlation or, you know, I don't know what it was. I just thought it was an interesting little side fact. But I didn't.
That is interesting.
Yeah, but I didn't want to put it in here as a direct statement, just because I couldn't find anything to really explain it to me.
Interesting. So, yeah. So, yeah, but like we were saying, so there's an increased rate in PTSD for those of us who have jobs where seeing a traumatic event is going to be more common. Cops, officers, nurses, firefighters. The highest rate, though, for PTSD actually occur among sexual assault survivors, military veterans, and those who have been in combat and survivors of genocide.
Mm-hmm. So this is a little bit different. Some of the more pertinent findings found that 85% of first responders have experienced symptoms related to mental health issues, and one third of them are formally diagnosed with either depression or PTSD. So of all the, so we all have 85% of us potentially develop some sort of psychiatric condition because of the job.
Right. Wow.
And that one third of those people develop either PTSD or depression, which kind of go hand in hand. This is relatively high, even amongst military veterans. It's pushing the level of military vet.
Wow.
And from the research I could find, one of the reasons they felt was that although military vets absolutely experience much more graphic traumatic events,
mm-hmm.
Much more intense traumatic events. I mean, I've been on a lot of calls. I've seen a lot of bad things. You have too. I've never been on a call where I'm truly in fear for my life.
No, it's never happened.
You know, police officers, I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
You know, but this is something that's very common amongst military vets who've been deployed.
Mm.
You know, I think, but from what I could find, they feel that the numbers are relatively similar between military vets and first responders is because of the duration of which we experience it.
Oh, that makes sense.
You know, you're military vets are going to be not going to be in combat situations for 20, 25, 30 years of their life.
Right.
So although the severity of what we see may not be at the same level of intensity, that's the repeated ongoing exposure to different things.
That makes sense.
You know, so yeah, it's some numbers from the Veterans Affairs of almost 31%. Of Vietnam vets develop PTSD, 10% of Gulf War veterans, 11% of veterans of Afghanistan, and 20% of Iraqi war veterans develop PTSD.
Wow.
So significant numbers, significant numbers. And, you know, if anybody's going to take anything away from today, and this is something we talk about on a regular basis, get help.
Right.
Get help.
Get it early.
Get it early. Get it, you know, don't feel ashamed. I mean, you've gone through something traumatic and horrific. But if you've had an assault done upon you, if you've been the victim of something,
mm-hmm.
if you've been in a situation that's stressful, be it combat, be it, you know, EMS related, get help. You know, yeah. There's no shame, none,
and
zero.
And it's also, it's one of the things, Mark and I have touched on this earlier. I don't remember which episode it was, so go back and listen to all of them and find it.
Mm-hmm.
But It's
along the way, find out where we're wrong on everything, let us know.
Yeah. Well, it actually, I mean, joking aside, actually do, because we right. do want to make this a better,
right.
the best podcast we can. But one of the things that we talk about is that no one seems to have an issue. Like, if all of a sudden you took blunt trauma to your leg and it hurt, you'd mm-hmm. go to the doctor and no one would care. There'd be no stigma, but we do have a...
You would catch crap for not getting it treated.
Right. People be like, I can actually hear my wife being like, "What? This hurts. Go to the doctor.
Stop letting Mark hit you."
Right. Exactly. Exactly. you know, and it's one of the things, but for some odd reason, when it comes to our mental health, we don't seem to want to take care of that in the same way.
There is a, for some reason, there's a stigma, and it's getting less.
Yeah.
But there's a stigma that if you go see a counselor, well, you just must be crazy.
Yeah. When, it's all in your head.
When study after study after study shows that proper counseling mm-hmm. is nothing but beneficial.
So it's one of those things where, I mean, my personal belief, though, is that we should be getting mental well-being checkups the same as we do any other physical exam. Because we don't seem to have much of a problem with getting regular physicals or regular checkups.
Right.
So why do we have the same problem?
I go see my doctor every couple months to check my blood pressure.
Right. Why not? Why not go see a psychiatrist every couple months to check your noggin?
And, especially in our industry.
Yeah. Because a lot of times, because like Mark and I mentioned earlier, again, is that a lot of people don't, PTSD can creep up on you.
Mm-hmm.
You can leave an event thinking, I'll be all right, I'll be okay. And then maybe for the first few days, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You are. But then sooner or later, these events stack up and they come back. And it would be better to catch those in a session on a couch than walking in on scene and suddenly freezing, not being able to help you or yourself or anybody else. And so that's why it's important to get these things done quickly. And medication, while medication certainly is an important factor, and there's no stigma in taking medication either, medication helps a lot of people get through PTSD and other forms of depression.
Mm-hmm.
It's also just as important to take your medication as it is to seek things like group therapy and address the issues at hand.
Right. And it doesn't have to be, it can be a single event.
Yeah.
I was doing a transport out of town. We're coming back. We stopped on I-5 to check on what looked like an accident. End up, it wasn't. It was a broken down vehicle. Some people helped to stop or okay. stopped to help. All very positive stuff. We were standing there literally, family from out of town borrowing a family member's van. The van broke down. They're on the side of the road. It's wet. It's cold.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get a hold of anybody in the household where they're staying to let them know what's going on.
Yeah.
Somebody who stopped, it was a mom and her kids that had the broken down van. Another mom had said, "You know, I'm going to take her up to this exit just a couple miles up the road because there's a truck stop there," basically, because it's always the safest place to leave people.
Right. Especially ones where the lights don't all work. Exactly. You know?
No, there was, she's like, you know, there's a restaurant there. And there was. There are five, these are, there's two of them across the street from each other.
There's a nice hotel. It's the base motel.
Right. These places are actually very, they're well lit, you know, and they're safe. It's warm. It's dry. They can get food. They have bathrooms, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I was asking the lady of the broken down vehicle, do you feel comfortable with that? Because if she didn't, for whatever reason, I would take her up there in the ambulance, her yeah. and kids, you know. So as we're standing there and we're at that point, they're getting ready to climb in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
The semi loses control, hits the center median, comes caroming across the highway and hits the bystander who stopped to help's vehicle, and her two kids are in it. And she just stood there and watched it.
Wow.
So we all go rushing down there to check on the kids. They ended up fine.
But still.
We had the children in the back of our ambulance while we waited for the local...
Authorita?
The local transporting agency.
Yeah.
To come in and take over patient care. We were outside of our service area. We were more than happy to transport if they needed,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they were just literally around the corner. So they left a piece of personal belonging in the bag with
yeah.
the youngest child's clothes in it. Mm-hmm. Right. So we called our dispatch, said, "Hey, can we run this by, you know, we know where they went," stuff like that. So we took care of something really quick. And then we went up there and I was talking to the mom and I'm like, "Look, I want to say your husband was right there." I said, "Look, I'm going to give you my phone number."
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the husband, I go, "In the least creepiest way, I swear to God, this is, you know," and I said, "You saw something pretty horrific today."
Yeah.
If you have a counselor, you know, this would definitely be something to go talk to them about. If you don't feel that they understand exactly, or if you don't have a counselor that can help address this, give me a call and I know in our industry, we have chaplains.
Yeah.
That will come out and talk to somebody about things like this. And they're not there to preach. They're not there to pray. They're not there. They will do those things with you gladly. Mm-hmm. But they're there to make sure that your mental health is taken care of. And I said, they would definitely come and talk to you and then help you get in touch with a counselor that could give you more long-term care if need be. But it can be one incident. It can be a bunch of incidences. Incidences?
Mm-hmm. Incidenti.
There we go. You know, and so, yeah, there's no stigma. There should be no stigma on mental health.
There is stigma, but there shouldn't be.
There should not be. Yeah. So get help. So anything else?
No, I'm set.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Positive.
Actually, I got about an hour of stuff I want to talk about.
Do you really? Okay, well, let's get to that.
There we go.
Let's dig deep.
A two-hour episode of medical stuff today.
The last hour of which is just us blathering, which I think we do enough of that as it is. Okay, so if you have any questions, concerns, complaints, corrections.
Yeah, we love them.
You can get a hold of us on social media. We are on Twitter at MedSideStuff, MedSideStuff. We're on Facebook at Medical Stuff. We're also on Instagram at MedicalStuff52.
Yeah. You can also email. Wait, did you just do the email address? Did I space out for that? Thank God. You can also do the best part is the look of like irritation / disappointment on your face that I just tuned out.
I slow pitched that to you, dude. Oh, I know. All you had to do was swing.
The best part about this.
And you didn't even bunt.
Oh, the best part of this, though, I can edit this whole thing to make it sound perfectly fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you can email us at medsidestuff@yahoo.com.
Really?
Yes.
Is that our email address, Chris?
Yes, it is.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I am.
You want to be like right pinky sure?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah, I knew it.
So, yeah, have a great evening. Please get help. Seek medical attention for any major or even minor appearing medical condition. Contact your primary care physician, see a specialist. And on that note,
toast.